Welcome to the New York Jazz Workshop podcast. I'm CJ Schern. Guitarist Dave Stryker has been one of the best jazz guitarists on the scene for over two decades. The Omaha, Nebraska native moved to New York in 1980 and gained national prominence touring with legendary organist Brother Jack McDuff for a year beginning in 1984. In 1986, Stryker joined the group of tenor saxophonist Stanley Turrentine, an association that lasted until the sax great's death in 2000. Stryker has 30 albums to his credit, and his latest is entitled Strikin' Ahead on his own Strike Zone label, a quartet featuring Steve Nelson on vibes, Jared Gold on organ, and McClenty Hunter on drums, with the program a hip mix of originals and reworked standards. The rarely used vibraphone and organ combination was inspired by the series of recordings guitarist Grant Green made with organist Larry Young for Blue Note beginning in 1964, featuring Elvin Jones on drums. I spoke with Stryker about the new album, the musicians and repertoire, as well as guitar giant John Abercrombie, who recently passed away. This interview was recorded on September 1st, 2017, when Strikin' Ahead was released, and Mr. Stryker was embarking on a series of gigs to promote the album. My thanks to Dave Stryker for the interview and Jim Igo of Jazz Promo Services for coordinating this interview. Remember that this podcast is just part of what the New York Jazz Workshop does to increase the reach of jazz education, offering classes in disciplines such as saxophone, vocals, and composition with such luminaries as vocalist Faye Victor, guitarist Vic Juris, Kenny Wessel, Miles Okazaki, and saxophonist Mark Momas. There is always something happening at the New York Jazz Workshop. I hope you enjoy my interview with Dave Stryker. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, CJ?
Hey, it's been quite a while since we talked to each other. Last I saw you back at Binghamton University in sometime in the 2000s.
Ah, okay, let me think. Wow, that was, Was I playing with the big band up there?
Yes, and I was with the Harper Jazz Project, the organization that put it all together.
That's right. Now, how you doing? Nice to see you.
Good, good. So before we start talking about the new record, I would like to talk about, because we just lost one of the greats of jazz guitar, John Abercrombie. You know, to me, he was one of the players who was one of the biggest post-West innovators, along with John Scofield and Pat Metheny and Bill Frisell and John McLaughlin.
So, yeah, without a doubt. I agree.
So just give me some of your thoughts on John Abercrombie.
Well, he was well, you know, I agree totally with what you just said. He was not a whole generation after, before Pat and Scofield. But I think he was about 5 years older or something like that, maybe a little bit more. And but he was, you know, one of the greats, just like those guys that we just mentioned. He had his own sound. He had a very poetic player. You know, I heard him play many times. I heard him with Bradley's playing. That's when I really dug him even more, because he was just playing standards, and you could see the Jim Hall influence there. He influenced all of us, all the guys we just mentioned, and myself as well. But besides being one of the great players, he was a good person and a very funny person and supportive. You know, I'm glad I got to know him. Whenever we interacted, he was always super nice to me. In fact, there was a downbeat blindfold test from the Detroit Jazz Festival last year, and they played one of my songs, gave some nice compliments on there. He guessed it was me. That was nice. So yeah, I like John. beautiful cat. I went up to see him a couple months ago, and he was definitely suffering. So I'm glad that, you know, I'm glad he's not suffering anymore. We're going to miss him.
Yeah, you know, I had no idea that he was sick, actually. And it was a real surprise to hear that he had just passed. You know, I get yeah, promos from ECM, and his last album, Up and Coming, was terrific.
Yeah, and, I want to check that out. Mark Copeland is a good friend of mine, too.
Yeah, he definitely came out on the, you know, he finished on the top of his game.
Yeah, so, I heard one cut off of it, and it was great.
Terrific, terrific record, and you're definitely right about the dry sense of humor also, because when you read the liner notes to that ECM box set that just came out a couple of years ago already, a year and a half ago, it's definitely full of that humor that you talked about.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
yeah, incredible, incredible. So, I just want to turn to Striking Ahead, and what I want to say about this album is I love it, I love the quartet, I mean, I've loved the last several albums of this quartet, 8-track, 8-track 2, which had Steve Nelson. 8-track had Stefan Harris, but I feel like the organ and vibes combo is not something that we've heard a lot of outside of, you know, Johnny Hammond and Lem Winchester, Jack McDuff and Lem Winchester, and of course, Big John Patton and Bobby Hutcherson on "Let 'Em Roll."
I haven't heard those McDuff, Lem Winchester records, but the first time I heard the vibe organ combination was with Grant Green and Larry Young and Bobby Hutcherson.
Street of Dreams.
Yes, Street of Dreams. So that was always those records that Grant made with Elvin and Larry Young are some of my favorite records. There's four with that rhythm section. One of them under Larry's name called Into Something. And those are just killer records. And but anyway, it just when I started this project, the 8-track project a few years back with Stefan, I was just looking to do something a little bit different than having a saxophone. And I thought the vibes would be a nice sound, and so I've stuck with it on these last couple records. This one is a little bit different in that we're playing my take on standards and then some originals and stuff. It's kind of what I usually do.
Just the band, like I said, Steve Nelson and Jared Gold, who's such an incredible organ player, because one of the things I like about Jared Gold is that he doesn't play any cliches that are typical of most organ players.
I agree.
He's so fresh. He uses a lot of interesting drawbar configurations and everything else.
He's definitely one of my favorites. Very original sounding, and you nailed it. He just plays music on it. He doesn't like play too many of those cliches of the organ. But I early on got to play with some of the greats like Jack McDuff and so I feel like, I've done that, so I'm going to play with organ. I want to just make music and. But, I like the classic B3, But I like Jerry. He's trying to take it somewhere different.
Yeah. When you played with Stanley Turrentine from, I believe, 1986 up through to the end of his life, were those organ combo situations, or was it with the keyboardist?
No, he had. Mm-hmm. He had always was bass, guitar, piano, drums.
Okay. Wow. Then the last member of the group on the album, McClenty Hunter. He has such a tremendous groove, and I first heard him when he was with Kenny Garrett. How did you connect with McClenty Hunter?
I think Jared introduced me to him, we played a gig at the bar next door in New York, and I immediately liked his playing, and we've been pretty much playing together ever since. I had Jared and I, when we first started this trio, Tony Reedus was our drummer, And of course, he unfortunately left us too soon.
Right.
So after that, we did one record where Steve Williams played with us, called One for Rita's. But after that, I started playing. You know, I like you know, bringing younger cats into the fold. You know, trying to pass on what I've experienced. And so, you know, McClenny and Jerry are both younger cats, and they have a younger energy. And McClenny's just, you know, playing guitar, but he also has got a lot of fire, and he can play a lot of different grooves. Great drummer.
Yeah, he's got a lot of taste too. I mean, what he plays, he never gets in the way of the music. Absolutely terrific drummer. And the material I found on the album to be just very intriguing and very, very, you know, subtly hip. For example, the opening track, Shadowboxing, is really cool because it's a 14-bar blues.
Yes.
And I was counting the bar lines while listening, and that was kind of cool, the little twist, you know?
Yeah, I just fell a figure at the end, so it's an extra 4 bars there. Funny you mentioned, I gotta go start working on some of this music pretty soon here, because I have three gigs this weekend. I'm playing the Jazz Forum tonight and tomorrow, and then Falco on Sunday.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, so I gotta go revisit those tunes a little bit.
Yeah, I'd love to make the trip down to the Jazz Forum tonight, because I'm in Yonkers, but actually I'm saving up for a trip to Japan. I'm going in November, so I gotta, you know, save some money. But those gigs sound terrific. And I guess one thing I wanted to ask about the repertoire on the album is the 5/4 take of footprints. How did you decide to do it in 5/4, and how did you come across the idea to reharmonize it in a really unique way?
Well, originally I had an arrangement. I wrote for a singer named Ronnie Charleston that I worked with and produced. But I ended up liking that arrangement so much, I said, man, I'm going to keep this, you know, stuck that one away, and said, I'm going to use this for myself too. It was just, you know, that tune is iconic. It's been played by everyone so many times, you know. But I thought, you know, how could I do something a little different to it? So I came up with that little guitar and vibes ostinato figure. And from there, you know, I thought, how can I write some chords that ostinato figure will. You could play underneath all these different chords, and it just branched out from there. Yeah, I like how it came out, though. It has a nice mood.
Yeah, and the ostinato figure, actually, that comes the closest to sounding like something off of Street of Dreams.
Yeah.
You know, with, you know, Grant and Bobby, the kind of floating textures that they would get on, like, Lazy Afternoon. And, you know, vice versa.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really such a terrific album, and... are there any projects that you're working on now that will be coming out in the near future?
I'm just looking forward to getting this new one out, Striking Ahead, and letting people hear it. Future, there's a lot, you know, I don't have anything planned right now, but, you know, I try to put out about one record a year if I can, just because I'm ready to go back to the studio, and I love going to the studio and working. I'm actually going work on some stuff this morning. I'm headed over to help Steve Slagle mix his new record that he recorded a couple months ago. That's going to be great with Lawrence Fields, Bill Stewart, and Scott Colley.
So, oh wow, that's a great band. They did an excellent record called Alto Manhattan.
So this is his next one after that.
Yeah. I actually thought Alto Manhattan was on your label, because the package design and everything looked so much like a Strike Zone album.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah, yeah. A guy named Chris Crocker, he's really great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a live album coming out eventually of this organ group?
Well, I did a live DVD a few years ago from a place called the Jazz Factory in Louisville with Bobby Floyd and Jonathan Higgins. That'd be a possibility. I'm not sure what I'm going to do next. I got a lot of ideas, and I'm not sure what I'll do next. I know Jerry is due to put a new record out, so I'm going to help him with that, and hopefully that'll be coming out soon, too, maybe next year or something. But right now, I'm just going to enjoy this music striking ahead, and the 8-track music, I still throw a lot of that in because that really brought people into the music. I'm about communicating. When people hear melodies that they grew up with or know.
Yeah.
Done in a different way. You can kind of bring people into the music, and I'm happy to do that. That's what it's about, playing for people.
Yeah, I really loved the, on 8-track, I really loved the versions of Wichita Lineman and That's the Way of the World. Those were, like, really, really hip.
Thank you. Well,
actually, you know, those made me think of Pat Metheny a little bit, because, you know, Pat Metheny, he's, like, one of my main men, and, some of the phrasing and everything that you had on those tunes kind of points to that very specific area and time where, you know, guys grew up, you know, playing that kind of music.
Pat is, of course, one of the greats. I met him when I was about 17. He came and played at my high school in Omaha, Nebraska. He was with Gary Burton, so that's the first time I met, and I got a lesson with him. So I've known him since 75.
Oh, wow.
But we're both from the Midwest, and there's definitely similarities. You know, a lot of the way that we grew up and the music we listened to, but... You know, he was one of those guys I love his playing, but I never want to try to play like somebody else. I'm trying to do my own thing.
Right. You ever think about maybe doing a duo record with him someday?
I don't know. Of course, it'd be an honor, but I don't think that's on his radar. He's got plenty of his own things going on.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, with the Orchestrion and the new quartet that he has, which I saw at the Beacon Theater. It's fantastic. We'll let you get to your, running through the music in just a second. But since you live in New Jersey, I wanted to ask, since the recent tragic passing of Rudy Van Gelder, what's going to be happening with the RVG studio in Englewood Cliffs?
I have no idea. I think Don Sickler's sister was helping Rudy. Maureen Sickler?
Yeah, she was.
And that's a good question. What the family's going to do with it, I have no idea.
Yeah, but it was certainly a classic place.
So many great records came out of it.
I mean, just the vibes in the walls of that place must be incredible when you go there to play. So Dave Stryker... Striking Ahead is out today, and it's available at pretty much any other major outlet and like any brick and mortar store where music is sold, right?
You can get it on my website, DaveStriker.com. I also have vinyl.
Oh, right, yes.
Do you do vinyl, CJ, or no?
No, I don't, but I know people who do. So anyway,
it's available there, but it's also on CD Baby, Amazon, iTunes, everywhere. It's out of stores, so hope everybody will pick it up.
Terrific. And the New York Jazz Workshop, of course, they are a music school in Manhattan, and they offer all sorts of classes and different instruments, saxophone, big band. Actually, Vic Juris teaches there.
Oh, great. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah. Very, very good faculty. Thank you so much for this interview, and I hope the gigs go wonderful this weekend.
All right, thanks a lot, CJ. Thanks for all you're doing.
All right, thank you, Dave.
Take care.
And there you have it, my podcast interview with guitarist Dave Stryker, noted by All About Jazz's John Kellman as one of the best unheard guitarists. For the New York Jazz Workshop podcast, I'm CJ Shern. Peace, love, groove, and keep swinging, everybody.